Merrill D. Wald, Wagner, South Dakota. Almost 89.
Okay.
I will be starting my 89th this in July. I went in 42, 2 years of training, from desert maneuvers to Louisiana and some more. I served almost 3 years, 2 years in training and a year in combat.
Okay, and you enlisted when you still lived in Armor, or did they draft you?
I was drafted.
You were drafted, okay. And how old were you at the time?
I think about 22, if I remember correctly,
mm-hmm.
or just past it.
Okay. Did you have any qualms about being drafted and being sent into service?
I had a lot of butterflies in my stomach, and I think that happened to most everybody. It's something new to you, you don't know what to expect, and it wasn't bad until we made the invasion of Normandy, and then it really got bad.
Okay. I want to come back to that later,
yeah.
But
okay.
for now, what I'd like to ask you about is, how much did you know about the war before Pearl Harbor, the attack on Pearl Harbor?
Well, not really anything. I was a farm boy. We only got the news on the paper and the radio, and that was it.
And what about after Pearl Harbor? Did you feel that once the Pearl Harbor attack took place, we shouldn't be involved in the war?
The day of Pearl Harbor, we knew that it was just a matter of time, because I had left the farm and I was put in A1, which was ready to go. And that was the end of my freedom. I joined the Army.
Even if it might have been involuntarily, you had joined the Army.
Well, you didn't know what you're coming up to. You know, it's all Greek to you until you've had enough training that you're about time for combat. Then you realize, yeah, I know where I'm going. And I guessed it right.
Okay.
I knew we was going to Europe because we went from the West Coast to the East Coast. And after all those maneuvers, and then we were shipped out to England. And that's exactly what I figured we were going, because otherwise they'd take us out the West Coast. So they went through. I'm glad they did. I didn't ever like that hot weather.
Did you have brothers who served in the military as well?
I had two brothers, and they both served. They were taken later in the war, and they never made it to combat areas, but they were lucky.
The war ended before they were sent into combat?
Before they got into combat. One had a restriction because of one eye that was defective, so he was limited service, and the other one was about ready to go overseas, and they stopped that.
Okay.
So they were lucky.
Do you remember where you were and what you were doing the day that the news of Pearl Harbor came, December 7th?
Yes. I was shooting rabbits with a .22 rifle west of Sioux Falls.
For any particular reason?
No, we just had something to do, and we went out and we were shooting rabbits. And when that news came over the radio in the car, I thought, oh, boy. Yeah, this is going to be it. And it was. They had me A1 right now.
I expect that if you were young and healthy and not otherwise tied down, you were A1 automatically, weren't you?
If you were healthy and so forth, you were just automatically taken. That was it. No questions asked.
So the first place that you went from South Dakota was to California, or did you go elsewhere?
No, I went to Kansas, Leavenworth, Kansas. And there we were sent to our units, I went to the 90th Division in Abilene, Texas. And majority of the boys, there were 40 or more that went with me from this area. And I'd say that 90% of them all went to the 90th Division.
And you said that was an infantry division.
Right. Right.
So you were the guys who were on the ground carrying the guns.
Right. I have a I have some pictures out there, and I got a letter from George Patton, General George Patton. And I got that about, oh, I don't know, 10 years ago. And it was the, he gave, and it's out here on the table. You want to read it, but it's the highest record of all divisions in Europe, of casualties and what we did, what we took, the prisoners we took, and it's a whole page of it. And very, very few have got them.
I expect so.
And then he died, I think around in July, after the war was over, in a car accident. But he made up this and sent it. Each one of us in the 9th Division got a letter from General George.
Oh my goodness. So you left South Dakota, you went to Fort Leavenworth, then
right.
You went to Texas,
Abilene,
and then from there you went to Camp Pendleton in California? Or?
No, we went to Louisiana first, then we went to the desert for maneuvers, and we thought we were going to Italy or somewhere, you know, where they had a lot of sand and so forth, but we didn't. We wound up going back to Fort Dix, New Jersey, and departed for Europe.
And so then you landed in England.
And landed in England, right.
And what did they do with you after you got there?
We were, I'm not sure, but maybe 3 weeks or a little bit over. We were, after 1 week, we were quarantined. You couldn't go out, you couldn't go in. And that told us what was going to happen. You're being quarantined, so no messages or information gets out from your unit. And we said, boy, we're heading for the invasion. And we were.
And you knew when you went overseas?
Well, you could tell by what was happening. They were prepared. We even waterproofed all the trucks so we could drive underwater. I know you don't know this, but very few people do know it. But we were designed to waterproof the vehicles, all joints, carburetor, ignition, the whole thing. Everything that could have leaked salt water into that unit was covered with cosmoline.
And what was cosmoline?
Cosmoline was a thick type of grease. It looked like chocolate candy, a light colored chocolate candy. And we put that on everything. And it put a hose off the carburetor on a stick that stood up in the air so that we went into the water, you could drive underwater. And we did. Jeeps, about all that stuck out was from your head was out of the water, and that was about all, because they dropped us off in 4 foot of water. Big trucks pulling guns and everything else, ammunition, and then they just drive right down on the sand, and we drove right up and drove right on the soil, right up on the soil, the beach on Utah Beach.
So were you part of the initial force that went in?
I went in D+1.
So the day
and
after.
That was as bad as going.
If you're comfortable talking about it, could you tell me a little bit about what happened?
Well, I don't know if you want to hear it. Gets a little gory.
As much as you're comfortable sharing.
Well, let's put it this way. We made the invasion of Normandy Beach June 4th. And we sat on that beach and probably a couple, 300-400 yards for days before we could move, because they put up a lot of resistance. And then we finally started moving gradually. And then we finally got to the first town, was St. Mary of Glace, and they had a beautiful church. It was probably the tallest one I ever saw in Europe. But anyway, if you, the longest day, all that, I'm trying to think of the guy that played the part of the Marine. Of the Marines that floated down, they floated, came in ahead of us, and read
Red Buttons.
Buttons, that's it, right there. Red Buttons played that time, and we took that town. There was four divisions, the 101st, the 82nd, the 4th, and the 29th, and we was in on it too. And we find, of course, as you further you go in, the more men you got to have, so you just keep spreading out and out. But that was the one gory place. I remember right at the edge of St. Mary Aglis was a road that they were protecting and had fortified and all the guns you could ever think of. And they wouldn't given orders not to give up, the Germans. They laid right there and got shot and killed every one of them. And they hauled them out. I went back to get water and stuff for our unit to the beachhead, and we had to go past this truck. And they had a two-thirds of dead soldiers, German soldiers. They had one grab of the shoulder, one grab of the legs. They'd swing him and throw him in the truck. And they finally had to pull over to let us go by. And when they did, it was like a jar of jelly, all these dead bodies in there. And the liquids from the bodies ran out the back. Blood.
Not a pretty sight.
Nope.
Is that one of the more memorable things from the experience? Or are there happier stories?
We had a lot of them. I could go on by the hour, and I'm sure you don't want to hear all that.
So you landed on Normandy Beach after D-Day, and it was easier than for
well,
you.
Well, we were there D-Day.
You okay.
But we couldn't get in until the guys that was to go ahead of us cleared the area.
I see.
Your area has to be made bigger so that you can bring more troops in. But it was probably the best 4th of July celebration that I ever saw. We sat on that beach, off the beach, and waited and waited, and airplanes would come back from the front, from the land, and the smoke flying out of them, and they'd parachute out, and down come the airplane. And the funny part about that airplane, it was going so fast, straight down, the pilot had already ejected, and he hit that water at such a terrific speed that you never saw, and that was on 150 yards from me, and it never made a splash. It like the ocean opened up, and he just let him inside and it closed up behind him. No splash.
Oh my goodness.
I've never forgotten that.
Wow.
But we get on the beach, and here comes an airplane right at us, a German airplane. We all run for the ditch. You know, this is the funny one. And everybody runs for the ditch, and you lay on your back or your belly any way you want to, but get your head down. And everything around, all those ships were shooting at him and on the land and everything. Well, I think he was scared half to death because everything was really flying. My birthday was the 4th of July, and this was June 6th. When it was all over and he was gone, I stood up and I said, boy, wasn't that pretty? And some one of my soldier friends was over and he said, you dumb so-and-so, blankety blank. Oh boy, he was mad. He didn't think that was funny at all.
He didn't see the beauty.
You have to have a little humor or you go nuts.
I expect so in a situation like that. It's very
And we
difficult.
Had many of them. Go look at that down there. It's got DeWalt written right on the down about the third table.
Okay, I will.
And you take a look at that. There's some gory one. There's horses in there that when we surrounded the German army in a four-mile stretch. They just piled in there, and we had them encircled. And they shot everything there was. There's horses walking there with only three legs. Everything was shot. We just blew them apart. And I think that broke the back pretty much until we got back to Germany, and then things got tough again.
Mm-hmm. And so in Germany, what was your situation there?
Well, it was war, just like it was in France. It never changed, except they were fighting for their own country and they were on their own land. And they got a little mean. But we won in the end.
what are some of the things besides the battles that you remember that stand out in your mind about the experience of being in Europe during the war?
Oh, there's so many things that, my God, I don't know where to start and stop. Now, what are you talking about, a battle in a certain, any one especially?
Well, I'm wondering about things besides the battles. I'm wondering about what the conditions were, the food that you ate, those sorts of things.
Oh, yeah, that's nice subject. We had bacon and eggs in a little can. All this is in a little can. Bacon and eggs, you had other kind of beef and eggs. All kinds of it. I can't remember anymore. They're getting kind of fuzzy on me.
Were these C rations?
C rations. We started into the K ration. I think that the K ration, I think, was the one with the cardboard box. It looked like Cracker Jack box.
Ah.
And the C ration come in a tin can. And cheese, I thought I'd never eat any more cheese, but I still like cheese.
But, was it good cheese?
Oh, they, yeah. It's the best. The best they could make and ship over there. The soldiers, the German soldiers, would rob the American soldier that was killed. That was the first thing they went for, was cigarettes and the food that they had on their bodies. Because it was just like being at home. If you didn't mind it, but after about 6 months of that, you got kind of tired of it. It was just plain sea ration.
Did you ever try to find other food to eat while you were over there?
Yes, we did.
Were you successful?
We had, I took a little joint out in the country of a German edge of town, just before dark. Well, these German people must have been going to this telephone. They had a telephone out there, and they must have been calling home or somewhere. Well, anyway, somebody shot them, either grenade or who knows what they shot them with. Well, they would land there for 2-3 hours and they were bloating. And we pulled in there, we were supposed to stay there that night. So I told the boys, said, there's some fish up here on this little creek. So go get some hand grenades and we'll get us some fish. So they brought up some hand grenades. Each guy took some and walked up and down this creek throwing the hand grenade. And, of course, it hit the water and go to the bottom. It wasn't more than 6-8 inches or a foot at the most. And pow, and up come the old fish. And we run, pick him up. So that night we had fresh potatoes out of the garden. We dug those up and we fried the fish. And England thought they had fish and chips in England. Well, we had them just as good as they did, and they didn't stink like theirs.
Do you remember what kind of fish they were? Do you remember what kind of fish they
yeah,
were?
Yeah, trout, rainbow trout.
Oh, those are.
Oh, yeah.
That is good.
But we got 21 of them. And then we blacked out a window in a house, and we started a fire with cognac. We pour that whiskey on top of his oak table, and burned a great big brown spot right in the table. We've done, we just blew it out and left it that way. But these other guys that were shot and they laid there for several hours, and we robbed the potato patch that night, and we put everything into a helmet and we cooked it.
Mm-hmm.
There was about 6-7 of us. And this one kid, I won't mention his name, he's not from here, but I don't want him to ever know it. But he'd laugh too if he knew. But anyway, he took a knife, he'd go down to their pockets, you know, and he'd just and cut the pocket and out roll a watch. Could be money, it could be a watch, could be anything. And, of course, he cut the leg and out poured the liquids from the human being. And anyway, we had one guy that thought he was a tough guy. Oh, he was tough. And anyway, while we were eating, I said, Lake, did you wash that knife after you cut that German's leg? Oh, I forgot. And this kid,
the tough guy.
The tough guy, he couldn't take it. Now, that's the same things you do that keeps you from going nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, all you think of is what's going to be there tomorrow.
What about your family back home? Were you able to correspond with them during
the
course of
your...
Oh, yeah,
I had no problem. I wrote my wife a letter every day.
So you were married.
If I could.
You were married before you went.
I was married. And I had a daughter, Linda, that was born while I was in combat, and I knew when the guy hollered, "Dewald, you got a mail, telegram," I knew what it was. Linda.
Did you know that that's what she would be named before you left?
Yes, we decided beforehand, yeah.
Okay. What about the conditions for your wife when she was here? Was she living in...
She followed me around, and she'd get a bedroom or wherever he could, and she'd work out with a lady at her home. She worked for Montgomery Ward's once, and she'd follow me from base to base. Went to California, went to Louisiana for maneuvers.
And after you shipped out, she came back?
Then she came back home.
And stayed?
Three women, all guys, the wives of the men that went with me into combat. It was their wives that came back with them, and they all three drove from New Jersey back here.
So did she stay with your folks or her folks?
She
or?
Stayed with her folks.
Okay. And waited for Linda to arrive.
Right. Okay. Oh, I got to tell you another cute one.
Okay.
I got a package in the mail, and I told her, send me some whiskey sometime. So she said, Rice Krispies, you know, they cut them in chunks. She laid that in the box on some Rice Krispies, put it all the way around it, and shipped it to me. And I got it, and I was in the first sergeant's tent that night, and I just got, well, you drink out of a dirty container, you try to wash them, and you can't, and then you get a dysentery. And I was sick as a dog, but they gave me some medicine to correct it. But that night, I got that mail. I opened it up, and here was that pint of whiskey. I said, First Sergeant, I said, would you like to have a drink? What are you talking about? I said, that whiskey, and I couldn't get rid of him. He wanted another one. Now on that story, I'll tell you another one. We was in Germany. We was getting the devil shot out of us. But anyway, one night I got another bottle of whiskey. And I went to the first sergeant, and I said, boy, I said, I froze my feet. And I was having problems walking. And I said, I got some whiskey. Do you want to drink, Sarge? Yeah! That was the second thing. But I said, I gotta have something from you. Can I wash my feet in here and put on some... you didn't have but one pair of socks, so you couldn't put on anything. So you let them dry, and you hope to God you could get by. I mean, you did, but that was about all. But it's a crazy thing to do.
Did he get you another pair of socks?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Never did get a second pair. I wore the other socks out. There was nothing left but heels in them. The toes are gone. The heels are gone. I wore the same boots. From the day I went into combat till the day I got out, they were a mess. And then we froze our feet even worse when they got into the Battle of the Bulge. Then I had a problem. I didn't go back to medics because it wasn't the darn thing they do. They said, if you can't walk, then they'll send you to the hospital. I said, by God, I'm going to walk as long as I can. And I finally made it, and it started warming up in the spring, and then I got over the frozen feet.
So when did you come back to the United States?
I can't remember exactly, August or September, in the fall.
Of 1945?
45, right.
So you were not part of, you didn't stay very long after the end.
Well, I stayed there about 6 weeks or a little more, and I pulled MP duty, trying to get enough ships down to Marseille, France. And anywhere there was a ship come in, they'd ship you to the closest ship. And then we went down there, and that sand down there was hot. Oh, and then my athlete's foot got to bother me. You couldn't wash your feet. It was impossible. Oh, I'll tell you something else. You talk about bath. Now, people want to go to the Army. And ladies, I just can't figure out why a lady would want to go to the Army. That's the worst thing you can do. We captured German Army women. They were the dirtiest women I ever saw in my life. God, I would run a mile to get away from one of them. But it's a mess. Look at the boys over in Iraq now.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting up that heat and that hot sand, and you walk in and it just burns your feet up.
Did you ever have any doubts about the war and about the justification for the United States being involved in the war in Europe?
We were involved, and we should have been, because if Hitler would have taken England, we wouldn't have had a home base to go to and take our equipment over there. It would be a different United States altogether, because he had in visions, and he already was using them, the submarines on the East Coast. He shot up tons and tons of American ships that were taking stuff over there.
And your rank when you were discharged was?
I was discharged as a sergeant.
Okay, okay.
Three stripes. I was a first sergeant for about 5 minutes. I never got to the tent because they hollered, "DeWall, you're going home." And I dropped everything I had and I left. And I was a staff sergeant for about 3 hours. And they sent, you can't be overrated. Now you can't have two sergeants doing a job or mm-hmm. any one. You can only have one. If he gets killed, then we'll give you another one. Either that or they'll promote you. They promoted me. But before the promotion could go through, they sent a rookie in that hadn't seen any combat to be our sergeant of clothing and so forth. So I got missed out again. All I was looking for was the pay raise. That was where the money come in. Because we started out with $21 a month. Now that's all you got. Nothing else. And my wife came down there. And if she didn't work, I even took her out to the campsite on a Sunday. You could bring your wives out there, your girlfriend, and have a dinner. We were broke. I said, and she found a dime. She get the cost a dime to go out there. And she came out and had lunch, and back to town she went. And the next day we got paid, then we had $21 again. But I think I drew that for 2 months. Then I started going up buck sergeant and you start out with a corporal. First, private first class, and a corporal, and a T corporal, and a T sergeant, and a full sergeant, and you just keep going as long as there's openings. And if you don't qualify, you don't get in.
And you did not remain in the Army after?
No, I couldn't get out of there fast enough. I was born and raised on a farm, and my dad died in 39, so we farmed for 2 years after that. So I was pretty well do what I wanted to do. Then I went to the Army. That all changed. You do this, you do that. Go sit down, stand up. That was it.
So after you came home, you went back to farming?
No. I learned a business by being in the Army. I used as a mechanic. I was a sergeant of the mechanic. I keep everything running so that everything stopped, I'd better be there. And in fact, I almost got court-martialed by George Patton. A truck stopped right smack in the middle of the road, and I heard that siren going. He had a siren on his Jeep. And I said, "My God," to the mechanic, I said, "Run and get something from the truck." And while he was doing that, I took the air cleaner off and stuck my hand on it, and a darn thing started. And here was that siren. He was coming right down the edge of them trucks. And that truck moved ahead just enough for him. He would have court-martialed me right there on the spot. He did it in Italy. Tipped the truck over and put it in a ravine and court-martialed the guy that was driving it. He was an honorary old booger, but he was a good officer.
So what about after you got home? Was it hard to get adjusted to life?
I had no problem. Oh, I used my mechanical experience. Then I went to school in Omaha and Ford Motor Company and any place I could to come up and get up on it. And then I was in business down here with a parts house and electrical shop for 30 years.
And then retired and?
Well, I'm not retired yet. If I don't have something to do, it drives me crazy.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to comment on? We're coming up on having, I've taken up about 30 minutes of your time here, so.
Oh, I could talk for hours. Battle of the Bulge, that was the worst one of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And we traveled 100 miles. We were 100 miles south of the Battle of the Bulge. And the big shots got together and they asked if they could possible, or Patton made the statement, I can be there overnight. And they all laughed at him. Well, that was a long thing to do with Patton, because Patton made a few phone calls down the line and we were picked. In the 90th, now you want to read that, the 90th information out there, and you'll see why we were picked. The 90th was 100 miles south of there, and we got orders to move to Belgium, and we took off. And snow knee deep, oh my God, it was cold. And I rode on a Dodge 3/4 ton with the hood open on one side, and I stand on the fender and stick my feet in there because I'd had them froze, and they were killing me. And I rode on that fender all the way into Belgium, the 100 miles. And the next morning was time to go to fight. Now this is gonna scare you, tell you how close you come. I had to go to the bathroom. And there was a little building right up the top, a long building. And I thought, well, that must be a toilet up there. So I walked up there through this snow, and my God, my feet were frozen. I opened the door, and it was all the infantry boys inside. So I closed the door, and I walked around the side of that building, just like this here. Walked around over there, and I took about three steps, and bah, something whacked. And I stopped dead in my tracks right in a stride, and there I stood, like a hunting dog, you know. And I looked at the building, and they'd shot an 88 artillery shell at me. They was waiting for somebody to go around there. And it went right past my nose and hit a rock building that's all made out of rock and concrete right beside my head like this, right in front of me. And then it dawned on me what happened. It was a dud. It didn't go off. And if it did, I would have been blown to kingdom come.
So other than your feet, you weren't injured seriously.
No, I come close. Oh, I come close. Airplane hit us, killed seven of us in our own airplane. Now, they talk about friendly fire. You know what friendly fire is?
Yes, I do.
All right, that's when your own people shoot you. This airplane come around when we had all these people in that surrounded. And a P-38, we didn't even know it was in the air, and it came around behind us and came down that hill, and we was moving up on the hill to get a better shot at them. And all at once, a 50 caliber machine gun just tore loose right beside me, just like you were sitting there, but you're closer, and we're both facing, and that driver, Donnie Yankton, he's still alive, he was sitting that far from getting his head blowed clear off, and I was sitting right beside him. And the plane came down, it got so low, the wings and the propeller hit the trees, and it took four of my buddies, one I just talked to a few minutes before that, and wrestled with him out there in the trees, and nice kid from Wyoming. He's the kind of a kid that if you wanted your daughter, your sister to marry somebody, marry that guy, he's a nice fella.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I picked him up 5 minutes later, and he was cut in half with his feet going the wrong direction. And it mowed down four of them. There was three more that was wounded and shipped out. One guy with both arms busted. They shipped him out, and I couldn't get anybody to come and help me. And there I was holding this man dying, and I couldn't do a thing for him because he was bleeding to death internally. That was it. We had lots of them. Oh, I got one picture you will have to see out there. And it shows a picture on the right-hand side of that group. My name's written on every one. And you look at that, and we wound up in Czechoslovakia. and we met the Russians. I didn't meet them. I didn't want to meet them. I probably shot a couple of them, too. But
they were our allies at that time,
they
right?
were our allies, so we didn't shoot them.
Okay.
Now, what was I had something that I thought of.
You went into Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, in Czechoslovakia, and that was 2 days before the war was over. And this old lady and old man, their teeth were gone. They're just all snagged, you know, for teeth. And I felt so sorry for them. But anyway, that night, I got up to go to the bathroom at night. Everything was under guard and everything. And this came back. This lady had come in. She was watching over us, and we didn't know it. And she went in there, and she was a woman. I would say she was probably 50, and her husband probably about the same.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no dental work, no doctors worth a dang. But anyway, she went over and put my blankets all straight in the bunk. I only had one blanket. Even in the cold weather, that's all you had was one blanket. And she had it all straightened out for me. And I thought, woman, you need something to look after us like that. So the next day, she baked us a cake. Now, we ate that cake, and four or five of us in the room at the time, and it tastes worse than your old dirty socks. Oh, there was no taste, no sugar, no nothing. Just flat as a pancake. Oh, it's very good, very good. You know, we couldn't speak their language. They couldn't speak ours. And the guys who could speak Bohemian wouldn't speak. I don't know what was the matter with them. So I said, okay, I'll fix you lady up. And I went out somewhere. I got a box or something. I went to every unit in my outfit. What you don't want put in this box, I'm going to give it to that lady. And I took back a bunch. Now, there's chocolate, cigarettes, candy, cheese, bacon, everything in there. So I gave her this, and she started looking through that, and she cried like a baby. And her husband was there, and I said, that's fine, that's no charge. And I just picked up and walked out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bet you that lady would have liked to hug me, but I felt so sorry for her. She was, oh, pitiful woman. But look out there. These people, their relatives are in that picture. In the little town of Chekhovoy. And the day after the war was over, they had a celebration for us, and they turned out in their finest. And it was something.